I have to confess that when Pastor Deb first asked me to share today on a Quaker perspective of the doctrine of discovery, I had no idea what she was talking about. So I Googled it. That's what we all do. And I learned that, yes, we all know a lot about the doctrine of discovery. I just didn't know it had a name. Louise and I lived for 3 years in central Idaho, and all around us were the reminders and the historical markers that tell the story of the Nez Perce tribe. Their homelands in the northeast corner of Oregon had been settled by settlers, but Chiefs Pajosis and the Nez Perce had worked together in friendly ways to create peace, and they were able to live together in some sort of tension, but peace. Until one day when Indians were accused of cheating a white man, and a fight broke out, and 3 white men were killed. The army came to round them up. The Indian agent had been coming to the tribe month after month, telling them they had to go to the reservation, they had to go to the reservation. But now, after this incident, the army came, rounded them up, and tried to force them onto the reservation. Chief Joseph spoke these words: "Let me be a free man, free to travel, free to stop, free to work, free to trade where I choose, free to choose my own teachers, free to follow the religion of my fathers, free to talk, free to think, and free to act for myself. Do this and I will obey every law." The answer, of course, was no. And the army chased them all the way to Canada. Well, 40 miles short, if they'd have made the border, they would have been safe. But in several pitched battles, killed most of them off. And in the middle of winter, with most of his people killed, and those that were left freezing and dying of hunger, he surrendered. "Hear me, my chiefs," he said. "I am tired. My heart is sick and sad. We've stood on these battlefields and wept, and I'm sorry I can't help it. Today is such a horrendous piece of our history. From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever. How could this have happened? Why?" The doctrine of discovery. That's how. That's precisely why. And I hadn't even heard of it. Didn't even know what it was. But that's it. It's a story of superiority of one group over other groups seen as inferior. It's a story of partiality, of favoritism, of sin. It's a story of us and them. And yes, at its heart, it's a story of racism and white privilege. The belief that God has favorites, that God is actually on the side of the rich and powerful. And it's still here. It has not gone away. Later, Chief Joseph, who had the opportunity to meet the United States President, Hayes, and interact with a number of government officials, said over and over and over again, "I do not believe that the Great Spirit Chief gave one kind of men the right to tell another kind of men what they must do." Most of the histories of the doctrine of discovery say that it began with several papal bulls. And one's really tempted to make a joke there, but probably ought to just leave it. But as Jennifer told us, the papal bulls were edicts, like executive orders. We would call it something. It's law, but it's done by the Pope. And with these edicts, he authorized Portugal and Spain to claim all unchristian lands they discovered, along with the right to all the property and to enslave the people. The Europeans grabbed a hold of that idea with both hands and ran with it. It was a perfect pairing of the explorer's yearning for new country, new territory, the growing commercial need for new markets and raw materials, and the expansionist views of the politicians of the day. The blessing of the Pope gave it all the moral and legal authority that they needed to do exactly what they wanted to do anyway. There were many opposed and said so, but their voices were swept away in the tide of popular national pride. Obviously, maybe you're thinking what I'm thinking. Wait a minute, this is not the first time, nor the last, nor will it be the last time that political power has aligned with religious power to produce very unchristian results. I'm so tempted to preach on that, but Deb told me to do this other day. England and France were not to be left out. And my goodness, the very year before the last papal edict, Christopher Columbus had made it to the New World. We're talking 1492, right? In 1493, the edict came down again. And France and England, there's no way they're going to obey the Pope. They want nothing to do with the Pope. And so the Pope has divided up the world and said Spain gets North America. And England and France said, but they're not doing anything with it, so we're going for it. And they did. So, well, I need to finish that sentence and say that they refused to obey the Pope about where they could go exploring. But, oh my, they were in total agreement with the Pope's doctrine of discovery. And so declared none other than Thomas Jefferson, at the time our first Secretary of State, that England owned the American colonies by right of discovery. And the United States, the newly formed United States, now owned those same rights by right of conquest. We won the war. In 1823, a case came to the Supreme Court, and John Marshall, who widely acclaimed as the greatest Chief Justice we have ever had, wrote the unanimous majority opinion of the court, writing the doctrine of discovery into American law. And there it has been ever since. This became the legal justification for manifest destiny that Jennifer talked about so well. It was the justification for the Indian Removal Act, just 7 years after this Supreme Court decision, that gave the United States government the right to exercise authority over all American Indians and to remove them whenever it was necessary for the advancement of the country. The reservation system, the boarding schools, and so much more has all been authorized and legally pinned to the doctrine of discovery. And I hadn't even heard of it. The Supreme Court has upheld the doctrine 17 times since then. And today, even now, there is before the United States Supreme Court two cases that hinge on the doctrine of discovery. The first is a case involving Navajo Nation water rights. The second one is a case that challenges the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978. That was an act that gave Native Americans, indigenous people, the right of first choice in child placements done by Child Protective Services, that when Indian children needed a place to be, then until that law was put into place, the agencies had all the power. The United States government had all the power. With this law, the tribes were given the right to place children with a family member, first of all, or with other Native people. Amazing. We actually did that. But now it's being seriously challenged. And it's believed that this court really might overturn it. They've done one other action in 2012 where they refused to take a case that would have addressed the same issue, but they said it had to go to tribal court at that point. So now the Supreme Court said, no, we'll take it. We're going to make a decision. And so they promised a decision at the end of this session, which is in June. And this is important. So that's John Marshall. There's Manifest Destiny. And that's John George. You probably don't know him, but he's famous. With me, at least. He's my brother. 2 years younger than I. And I'm holding here a document called Reconciliation and Child Welfare, Touchstones of Hope for Indigenous Children, Youth, and Families. This was written in 2005 and presented as a way forward, a way to look back, but a way to reach forward and to improve the child welfare system in America. And 200 Native Indigenous people gathered with agency leaders in 2005, and this paper was presented to them. Five people authored this paper. My brother is one of them. Oh, sorry, that's a shameless plug. But anyway, to my joy, he now lives in Santa Fe. He's been in the Pacific Northwest his whole career, but he now lives in Santa Fe. And first time we've ever lived close to family or any of my siblings, so this is awesome. Anyway, I asked my brother John about the Doctrine of Discovery, and he wrote me an email, and this is what he said. And I'm just going to read it, so pardon me. John says, my exposure to the Doctrine of Discovery is through seeing the destruction and multi-generational grief and trauma experienced by Native children and families. The boarding school era is only barely over, and child protection services have largely, without meaning to, continued the removals of Indian children at disproportionate rates. These are actions by good people trying to do good things, but when you step back and look at it, these systems have really been complicit with the federal government in carrying out social control and saving Indian children from their own cultures, which were seen as inferior, so that we could provide them with better lives if we raised them ourselves, incorporated them into our own culture, and washed the Indianness out of them. There have certainly been examples of Native children who had a good experience in boarding school or of being raised in non-Indian families, but by and large, the experience has been a disaster. No Indigenous family that I have ever met through my work or met through the relationships I had with tribal or First Nation leaders has been untouched by the impact of this doctrine. That's why it is so relevant today, and it's not near over. But it has been enormously heartening to see the positive effects of the Indian Child Welfare Act, combined with so many tribes retaking control over their affairs, strengthening their governments and their services, and including connecting with their traditional beliefs and spiritual practices. There are still lots and lots of problems, many or most of which have their origins in colonialism. But it is very clear that progress can and is being made for the restoration of health and well-being is possible when Native people are respected and allowed to decide what is important to them and are honored in their ways of knowledge about that and about what they need to do and be to be healthy and to thrive. The doctrine of discovery has been repudiated by the United Nations. The United States voted no, 1 of 4. A Bill of Rights for the indigenous people of the world has been adopted by the United States, by the United Nations. The United States voted no. Now, to be honest, we can't leave it right there, because after a couple of years and some adjustments and things, they changed their vote. There were 4 nations that voted no, and they all changed. And so the final adoption of the repudiation of the doctrine of discovery and the adoption of a Bill of Rights for Indigenous people was a unanimous vote of all the member nations of the United Nations. Pope Francis has repudiated the doctrine of discovery. Most denominations have repudiated it or are on track to do so. The Presbyterians, USA, in 2016. So now, what do Quakers have to do with this? And why did Deb ask me to say anything about it at all? Actually, there is no such thing as a Quaker church, because Quaker is just a nickname. The name of what people know of as Quaker is Friends. The Society of the Friends of Jesus comes from John 15:14. You are my friends if you do what I command. I'm not totally sure what Deb had in mind, but I think it must be something along these lines. The early Quakers, and maybe a disclaimer here to start with, well, I think the early Quakers got some things really right. They're no different than anybody else. And the Quakers have had just as much difficulty living up to their ideals as anyone else. So if it sounds like I'm kind of pouring it on for the Quakers here, it's because I am. But not really, because we're all in the same boat. But at this particular point in history, they understood some things that are important for us to hear. The early Quakers believed that God could be personally experienced and known, and they believed that there is that of God in every person, which gives worth to every person, and they lived that out in the way they lived. Their basic values were summed up as simplicity, peace, integrity, community, and equality. They instigated prison reform, not with protests, but by going into the prisons and offering humane treatment and classes and training. Now, for a lot of them, it was easy, because thousands of Quakers ended up in jail themselves. And so they were right there where they could provide this ministry. They did the same for humane treatment of the mentally ill, the marginalized, the people that others aren't looking at. What they most got in trouble for was they opposed the social class system in England. And that system really said that the rich are superior to the poor. And they did it by refusing hat honor, it was called. Everyone wore hats, and you took off your hat to people above you, and you kept your hat on for the people below you. And they didn't take their hats off for anybody. They wore plain gray clothing on all occasions, refusing to dress up like the higher class or to dress down for the others. They just wore this as a testimony. They used what they called plain speech. It sounds funny to us, but thee and thou, Quakers talked that way, but then a lot of people did back in that era. But thee and thou was the plain language. That's what the common people spoke. The you and yours, that was the upper class. And so they just spoke thee and thou to everybody. They gave no allegiance at all to that social system. They considered it a testimony of integrity to do what they called speaking truth to power. Where they saw injustice, they stood up to it, regardless of the consequences. And as I said, thousands of them were in prison. The story of one gathering where all the adults in the entire church, or they called it a meeting, were in jail. So the kids came and did the service. Amazing time. They were concerned about injustice in the economy, in the way goods were bought and sold, because depending on who you were and whatever, or who could be exploited, the prices changed. So the Quakers, businessmen, all decided on one price for everybody, no matter who you are. You can't wink at me and get a better price. Nothing. You can send your kid to the store and you get the same price as anyone else. And frankly, it was a good business tactic. They made money on that deal, and good for them. But it was a protest on their part against the way people were being treated in the business. Well, as we all know, the Puritans came to America seeking religious freedom and found it, which was an awesome thing. And upon finding it, unfortunately, denied it to everybody else who came along, including the Quakers. And the Puritans branded the Quakers as heretics, jailed them repeatedly, put them in stocks in the public square, and finally, they hung four of them on the Boston Commons, on the gallows. I lost the picture somewhere. Don't know where it went. Anyway, if it shows up, you'll see it later. It's a picture of them taking Mary Dyer, a young lady, was one of the Quakers who was hanged on Boston Common that day. William Penn was an English Quaker who received a large land grant from King Charles II. And yesterday, King Charles III. Took him a while to get another Charles, didn't it? But anyway, he got a big land grant because King Charles II owed William Penn's father a big debt. And so this land grant became Pennsylvania. Now, the irony here is not lost on me. I'm sure it's not lost on you. William Penn created a safe place for Quakers to be in the United States by using the doctrine of discovery. Ouch. But he did. And Pennsylvania, under William Penn, became a sanctuary for all people, religious freedom for everyone. The Indians were welcomed, and friendly agreements were made over land and employment and their life together. The peaceable kingdom, some called it. And Voltaire, the French philosopher, wrote that Penn's treaties with the Indians in Pennsylvania was the only treaty with Indians in America that was never sworn to. Quakers didn't believe in. They had to tell the truth all the time because they had the present Christ there. They weren't about. So they didn't swear to this treaty, and this treaty was never broken. That's an awesome heritage. Would that it had always been true everywhere. The Quakers were addressing slavery 100 years before the birth of our country. They paid wages to their slaves. They ate together at the same table. They became friends together. The owners taught the slaves to read and other types of education, and even began freeing their slaves wherever possible. The Underground Railroad, I'm sure you realize, is mostly run by Quakers. It was not only Quakers, but Quakers were very involved in it. Well, okay, what's the point of all this? They did all this out of their personal faith in the Christ who is present, who speaks to us, and who asks us to love our neighbors and love our enemies. They believed in the God who shows no favoritism or partiality, who loves all people equally. Now, obviously, that's not just a Quaker value. That's Christian. That's following the law of Christ. but supposedly they are also American values. Let's read this together. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Person just wants to be quiet and sit with those words. Those words were true in regard to the colonists who used these words as justification for separating themselves from England. These words were true for them. If you were European, white male, these words were true. Thomas Jefferson, the man who penned those words, never believed that they were true in regard to the American Indian or to the slaves that he owned and worked his plantations. They say that hindsight's 20/20. We're able to look back and see the blind spots of those who go before us. But we're people just like them. Do we see our own blind spots? Do our actions and the way we relate to other people line up with what we say we believe about God, about people that are different than us? The Quakers were compelled by the love of God to action, to live out their beliefs in the way they lived, in their relationships with other people. May this be true of us too. The Quakers have an interesting tribal custom that they have Quaker queries. There's quite a list of them. But here's number 18. And Quaker queries are defined as thoughtful questions we ask ourselves. In a biblical sense, maybe this is allowing the Holy Spirit to speak into us truth about what he sees in us. So there's the question. Do you speak out for justice and morality and against oppression, exploitation, and public wrong? Do you recognize the equality of persons? My wife proposed a Jesus query. I think you can see where it came from. Do you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind? Do you love your neighbor as yourself? Would you just wait in some quiet time and think about those words? Let the Spirit speak to you as we wait. Amen.